Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome into a special edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr. here with you, Cincinnati.com, Cincinnati Inquirer. Jim has earned himself a week off. He really has. He needs to get away from me. He's been real angry with Hot Take James lately. So we need to tell him to go somewhere, relax, just calm down, and get away. And I'll take care of this week. And I thought, you know what? What a better place to go when you're in the dead season of the NFL and you just are kind of making up things to talk about anybody. It's somebody who does that better than anybody in the business. Mo Agher, 1530 ESPN, 700 WLW, many other places. Yeah. Mo, it's good to have you. I came all the way out to your studio.
Yeah. So nice to have you here. Yeah. You know, there's two things. Number one, you talked about Hot Take James.
Yeah.
How do you – I have to work with him every day.
Yeah.
Every single day.
Here you are.
And then you talk about, like, the dead time of year. I don't know who wrote the article last week. Either you or Jim had to write the piece about the franchise tag. And I talked on the air about how difficult your – how miserable your job has to be. When I said, like, those two guys must wake up in the morning, text each other, and go, okay, who's going to write the franchise tag story?
Yeah.
Because Hot Take James asked me, he's like, should we talk about this? And I said, I would rather dive into a vat full of pythons than have to talk about the franchise tag for an extended amount of time.
Did you notice that was actually last year's franchise tag story with a tag on top of it that said, this has been updated from last year with new information, but it hasn't changed. The Bengals haven't, you know, don't use the franchise tag.
You know, I might start doing that. I might roll out old shows and just go, okay, just change the names and the dates.
Yeah.
The themes are the same.
Yeah, you go and just dub in the new year, like 2017, you know, into the middle of it. I think that we've considered it. But yeah, we were like, we have to write the franchise tag story, and we basically said it really hasn't changed.
No.
Run the same thing, put a note on top that said this is still the same as last year, just so people have for reference that they when they start asking about
it. You know, it's funny, and I know you have things you want to talk about. Rocky Boyman a couple of weeks ago brought in to the radio station a newspaper from when he was recruited to Notre Dame, signing day. It was to show his signing day story in the old Cincinnati, not the old Cincinnati Inquirer, but the large version of it that they used to publish. And right underneath a story about Rocky signing with Notre Dame is a story about the Bengals draft. And the headline is, Bengals likely to take best player available.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? You could just take that, plug it in, change the name of the coach, mention a couple of guys, boom, done.
Yeah, no, some in-depth analysis in that piece, I guess. I think we'll take the best guy. That's what we're going to go for. Yeah, I saw Rocky on the way back. I saw him twice at the Super Bowl. I saw him sprinting to the booth because his flight had been canceled into Houston the day before. And I saw, so I was walking around doing Instagram stories about behind the Super Bowl. And all of a sudden, I was literally doing something on all the people in line who were trying to charge their phone before the game.
Yeah.
How did you not prepare that far in advance? There were like 50 people in line at this charging station. I couldn't believe it. And then as I'm doing it, so when you watch the video, you see Rocky like blowing by. And then he yells my name at the end because he sees me doing it. And then I saw him. We had the same flight back from Houston as well. He was there doing the BBC broadcast, which apparently made it on in the second quarter.
Yeah, I heard they had some technical problems,
Rocky's loving life over here, too. It's good to be over here near his stomping grounds. I got some Bengals stuff.
Okay.
So
it's appropriate.
Mostly it is. We could talk about the Knicks for it has happened before. I want to kind of poke around on a few things that you've been talking about recently on your show that I think are some interesting takes. And one of them was into you changed your mind on something.
Yeah,
That happens.
I know. Doesn't happen often in our business.
No, it doesn't.
But it should happen more.
People look at it as you failed then yourself, right. Your own brain,
right.
By deciding that you were wrong before. The Kevin Zeitler versus Andrew Whitworth conversation was where you changed your mind off of. What was your original? Why did it change? What was your original thought on it, and why did it change? We'll start there.
Originally, it was watching Andy backtrack and get hit as often as he did, and you're thinking about okay, Whitworth and Obwehi, and if it's simply a matter of remove Whitworth and plug in Obwehi, boy, that's a dicey proposition. But part of what got me thinking about it, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about Adam Jones, is, man, I remember last year we had to re-sign Adam Jones, right? Well, he was great in 2015, and this isn't even related to his off-field issues, but he wasn't quite the player he was this year. And so I'm thinking about that, and I'm going, okay, if a year ago it would have been older Adam Jones or a younger with still some upside Dre Kirkpatrick, I would have wanted the younger guy. And then I thought, well, why don't I apply that logic to the offensive line? Now, in an ideal world, sure, they bring both back and they figure out a way to pay Dre and they have money left over to make upgrades in free agency and make it all work within the cap. But to me, it's turned into simply a matter of age. I love Andrew Whitworth. And I'll tell you what got me thinking about this specifically is I was watching A Football Life on NFL Network. It was about Bill Walsh, and his old center, Randy Cross, talked about Bill Walsh calling him in the office and saying, hey, I think you could play for like 5 or 6 more years. Problem is, you're only going to play here for like 2.
Right.
And he said, I just want your good years. I think the Bengals have gotten, needless to say, they've gotten Andrew Whitworth's good years. He may still have good years in front of him, but I feel like I know that Kevin Zeitler has good years in front of him. With Andrew Whitworth, with each passing day, it's more of a gamble. So the sure thing to me is the younger player. And so, yes, I would like Andrew Whitworth back, but if it's either or, I'd rather have the younger guy.
Yeah, and that's an interesting conversation that we've been having a lot lately my take on it is another thing is, so how do you want your offensive line to look next year?
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather have, let's just say, Andrew Whitworth, Clint Bowling, Russell Bodine, TJ Johnson, Jake Fisher.
Right.
Or would you rather have Jake Fisher, Kevin Zeitler, Russell Bodine, Clint Bowling, and Cedric Obwehi at left tackle? I am pretty sure I could probably try to figure something out at guard. You know what happens?
Right.
You know what happens to guys who can't play tackle? They play guard.
Right.
If a guy who's drafted, there is something to the is a guard really worth $8 to $10
sure.
million dollars?
Absolutely.
If you're gonna have a hole in one of those two places,
mm-hmm.
Where would you rather have it? I probably have more options to play right guard than I do at left tackle. Even though, which is really where all of this stems from, you have a first round pick that you were supposed to have playing left tackle, but he has proven he might not be able to play.
Right.
That's really where all the problem of this stems from. But that doesn't change the solution. I just feel like I have more answers at guard when I start comparing these two than I do at tackle
sure.
right now.
Yeah.
And more damage can be done from out there as we learned this past year on not the blind side.
Right.
What can happen? I hear you. You want their best years, but you also want your when I look at that cap player that you know over the cap whatever they have the everybody ranked by cap hit, those top 5 to 7 guys better be your biggest guys at your best positions. And I don't know that I want Kevin Zeitler to be on that list. I'd rather find ways to pay other guys that
money. Yeah, there's a lot of validity to that. I tend to strip away the caponomics end of this, which is probably not the best way to do it because, as you well know, what guys get paid and how it affects other areas on the roster, you know, that's a huge part of your decision making. I look at it from the standpoint of, yes, you have to protect Andy Dalton's blind side. That goes without saying. You would know better than I how they feel about Cedric Obwehi right now, but I'm willing to believe that they do trust themselves. So Cedric was not good last year, and we saw that. We saw he got benched, and Marvin Lewis done bench guys.
Right.
So to me, I'm going, okay, the Bengals probably still trust themselves, and they still feel like Cedric can play that position. And maybe the idea of him playing left tackle week one 2017 is not something we want to entertain. But they also are trying to rebuild the run game. And that's got to happen from the running back position itself, because you have to get better there, and the Giovanni Bernard injury situation. Can you really repair the run game to the extent that you want if you're taking out your best interior offensive lineman? And again, you're right. It's a little easier to plug and play a guard. I understand that. But, you know, Kevin was as good as he was. He was helping out a center that most people feel was deficient or is deficient, whether that's right or wrong. He was also helping out, you know, on the side of the line that had a right tackle who struggled this year. So there is – I know that what people fall back on is the Bengals don't value guard. Right. But maybe they should. You know, They also don't value linebacker, and I watched that unit play last year, and so maybe they should. If it turns out that Whitworth is here and Zeitler has to go, I do understand the logic. I'm not going to come on here and yell and scream. If the worst case is we kept one of the best left tackles in the game and it came at the expense of a guard, okay, that's all right. But how well is Andrew Whitworth going to play next season? He was great last year, but he's now 35 years old.
Right.
There's just something about getting the guys through the duration of their prime years. I'd like to see them do that with Kevin.
Yeah.
But I also know they're not going to overpay for it.
Right. I've changed my mind,
but it's not like I'm going to come on here and yell and scream if they don't want to make Kevin Zeitler one of the highest paid guards.
I understand. I think it's a really interesting argument that I think there's probably both sides of it inside the Bengals locker room, and it is a close call.
But do you think it's either or? Do you think it's legitimately, like, if they sign Andrew Whitworth the first day of free agency, do you think that means we are automatically saying goodbye to Kevin Zeitler?
Yeah, and I think that decision's already been made.
Okay.
Personally, I think people we talk to, the feeling I get, here's the other thing. When I was at the Super Bowl, talking to A.J. Green, Andy Dalton, you know, the first thing they said to me was, we got to get Whit back. Hmm. Now, they're not Duke Tobin.
Right.
They're not general managers. They're not in charge of making tougher decisions, like maybe telling popular players they have to go. But those are two guys that are at the centerpiece of that locker room that know what could happen if he leaves. And so when I start looking at tiebreakers in this call, I start thinking about what does happen to a locker room that, let's be honest, has been called into question and has a lot of issues on its own if Andrew Whitworth leaves it. I mean, he really has been the linchpin that's at the front of all, and not just for being a good media guy. I mean, anybody will tell you he is the guy in that locker room. That's part of it too.
I remember you're right about that, and you know, AJ Green doesn't say things just to say things, and Andy Dalton doesn't either. So when they do say something, you listen. When AJ talked about the offensive line this year, that was worth paying attention to. It was also interesting to me though, and you know, not to read too much into it, but Marvin Lewis talked at the Senior Bowl. And I don't have the quote in front of me, but he made allusions to, look, some of the other guys in the locker room need to move into these types of roles that Andrew has had for so long. Now, you know, I don't know specifically what he was saying, but there is going to come a time, and it's sooner rather than, you know, later, where Andrew Whitworth isn't going to be there anymore. And so the leader of the team has to emerge from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so that's a consideration. I'm not sure for me that would be the tiebreaker, because if somebody at some point is going to have to be that guy. I don't know who it is. You know better than I, but somebody at some point has to be that guy. Again, if Andrew Whitworth is here in 2017, that's not a bad thing.
No.
No one is saying, I don't think anybody is saying, well, let him walk. You know, there are players who are up that I'd let walk. But if it's either or, man, I just like guys in their prime. I'm not a huge fan of watching guys
get older.
You know, get old.
Yeah, it's a tough call, and we'll see how it plays out. And you know, the hard part gets into it is, okay, well, why can't they just keep everybody? Well, at a certain point, you just can't. And people have different debates on how the Bengals should handle their own cap. I hear where people are coming from. Well, look at how other teams do. They get a bunch of guys and they restructure contracts, and then it's just not how the team works. So they're not going to say that they're not going to actually have $45 million in cap space, how a lot of teams like to put it. They view it differently, and they have spent to the cap and beyond as much as any team. They're in the top 10 of cash spending in football over recent years. So people will say you should just re-sign both of them. They have plenty of money. That's not necessarily true.
We spent 3 years talking about how well-run this organization is. We spent 3 years, from 13 to 15, whether it's you writing it, me saying it, or people rolling in from other parts of the country, to write about how this is an organization. Look, do it the Bengals way. Do it the way the Bengals are doing it. Don't do it the way the Buccaneers and the Dolphins and teams like that and the Redskins. Do it the way the Bengals are doing it. So they have one down year, and we think that they're going to change that.
Right.
The way they handle the cap and the way they handle the roster and the way they handle free agency, that led to five straight playoff appearances. That led to an 11-win average across three seasons, where they were one of the best teams in the NFL in 2015 and for 3 years had one of the top three or four rosters in the entire league. Do you expect, because they had one bad year, which was felt as it dragged on almost inevitable, do you expect them to totally change how they do things? I wouldn't want them to do that.
No.
I don't want teams to go, oh, we had a bad year. Let's blow up everything. Let's change our entire thought process. So, you know, that's where I come from. People talk about, well, you know, they're going to make a huge splash in free agency and they need to change how they sign their own guys. No, they don't.
No.
We spent 3 years talking about, boy, the Bengals do it the right way. Chances are they still do it the right way.
And part of the problem is they are victims of what the NFL is now. The NFL is, you either A, have one of these five or six quarterbacks, pick whoever you think they are, but you know basically who they are. You have one of those, you're in it every year. You have the next guy, you need all of the pieces to be in place, and you can, like Matt Ryan was, you can then take the next step, make a run, or like Andy Dalton was in 2015. And the problem is, the league is set up where you can't consistently have those pieces unless you hit draft after draft after draft, and you just aren't going to do that. The numbers dictate, no matter how good you are, even the best scouts, the best GMs, they miss on a draft or two. And the Bengals have been victims of the last few drafts not paying off when the guys from the previous ones were left. And so that's not a time to abandon your philosophy. It's a time to double down on it and start hitting on those drafts.
Yeah.
That's really what it always has come down to for this team. They have been at their best when they have drafted well, and they have hit a little spell here where they haven't.
Right.
With the same guys in place that did. So you're not going to all of a sudden hate on that. You just, like you said, you stick by your philosophy and you go with it. You don't all of a sudden say, you know what? We missed two drafts. It's time to spend $100 million in free agency.
And they have a better chance of hitting in the draft this year because they're drafting earlier and they have more picks. Depending on what happens with A.J. McCarron, they may have even more. You know, look, years and years and years of drafting late, ultimately, unless you're the New England Patriots, it comes back to hurt you. It does. It's the nature of the league. And so you have a team that has components in place that they've locked into that have been a part of a lot of success here. You have an earlier pick and you have more of them. You have a better chance of, if the draft is a crapshoot, which ultimately I think it is, if the draft is basically a lottery, well, you have a better chance if you have more lottery tickets, and they do this year. So I don't expect them to deviate from what they've already done. I don't expect them to, you know, allow a mass exodus where all the big three all walk away. I expect them to do something that, even if it's not what I prefer, I look at it and go, okay, that makes sense.
Right.
Right? I think no matter the outcome with Dre, Kevin, and Witt, I think I'm going to look at it and go, all right, I see the thinking there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They might have let a player walk that I would have preferred, but I'm probably going to go, yeah, okay, fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
And this is why I'm shocked at you right now.
This is why?
You are like Mr. Optimism. It's like you've been growing roses out here on the concrete roof. I'm just trying to understand. I thought you were supposed to be the bearer of pessimism. And you know what? You really are.
You're that guy.
Now you're turning over a new leaf, I feel.
It is. My lifestyle is changing, and so I'm looking at things differently.
Yeah.
I didn't like last year. Right? No. Bengals fan did. I didn't like it personally. I didn't like it talking about that team. But, you know, I think it was watching the New England game where I said to someone, like, it's just not going to happen this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was early. You know, that was, they had gone to Dallas and gotten trucked, but you still felt like, okay, they'll get some guys back and maybe come back after the bye. And I just remember saying, you know, this team just doesn't have it. And this just feels like the byproduct of some attrition, losing coordinators, there's some staleness to the team, which is going to happen, and they've kind of gotten old on defense, and so you know, yeah, it stunk, but to me, it wasn't like, oh my God, the organization's going to fall apart. They're building from a place of strength, right? I say all the time, I know that building around Andy Dalton works because I watched it in 2015. You know, dude was on the periphery of the MVP conversation Absolutely. That year. He was fantastic. And so maybe all the ingredients have to be there and all the conditions have to be just right. But if you work to make them just right, I have a feeling I know what that looks like. And so they're building from a place of certainly they have holes and needs. But, man, there's a lot of teams who missed the playoffs last year who are looking at their drawing board without a Dalton, without a Green, without a Tyler Eifert, without a Vontaze Burfict. Without even some of the younger guys that hopefully step up and do some things next season, without a Geno Atkins, they're building from a place of strength. It's an earlier pick. You know, I trust Marvin as much as people bang on Marvin Lewis, as much as I bang on Marvin Lewis, whatever his role in what they're going to do this offseason. I kind of feel like I trust him with this. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like I trust him with – you might say I don't trust him in January. Well, we'll talk about that in January. I trust him through this type of offseason.
Yeah.
Where they're going to have some upheaval and they're going to have some turnover and they're going to have some important things to do. I trust Duke Tobin with this. I trust them organizationally. And so I look at that plus the fact that the AFC was garbage this year. The Pittsburgh Steelers have a quarterback who's 35 years old. Who were more limited offensively than people believe. The rest of the division, do you trust Baltimore? Call me when you have an offense. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Cleveland's not there. The conference as a whole, you know? I mean, if the standard of playoff team is the Houston Texans, can the Bengals get back to that? Of course they can.
Absolutely. I just, you know, you're right. The biggest thing is you have to have the key premium positions taken care of. And you are always 1 year away if you have a guy in the top half of the league, a quarterback,
mm-hmm.
and a guy who has proven he can be in the top five.
Right.
If you have that, you are always 1 year away because mm-hmm. you are always one draft, one skill player, you know, from making it all happen, putting it all together. And people, you know, really, I don't think respect how well Andy Dalton actually played last year when you're considering all the BS that was going on around
yeah.
him. I mean, he was in the pits of hell back yeah. there, and the one guy trying to hold it together, and half the time having to do it without A.J. Green, and the other half the time having to do it without Tyler Eifert and right tackle. I've never seen anybody perfect the right shoulder forward move. 1, 2, 3, right shoulder forward, sprint out to scramble to the other side. I mean, I just don't think people give him enough credit. When you have that, you know, any of the periphery elements of a quality football team can be overhauled in 1 year, whether that's through guys getting better, whether that's through a few new pieces, whether that's through a draft, whether it's through a draft that not only will they have 11 picks, they'll be getting back. They're getting basically an extra first round
yeah.
and fourth round pick in Billings and Jackson next year. I agree. I think people came out of it really angry, and then when they look back on it, like, well, now that we survived that, I think fans have a feeling of, you know, it does feel like you had to kind of go to the dentist last year.
Yeah.
And now you feel okay. You're ready to come out of it.
It just felt like the bill came due.
Yeah.
And it would have been, you know, so much easier to absorb had they had some prior postseason success. But it just kind of felt to me like, all right, the bill's come due. And, you know, now this coming offseason, they're going to have to do some things that they haven't had to do in a while. I mean, you know, for a couple of years, I think it was hard to look at the roster and go, boy, there's gaping holes all over the place. You were just sort of filling in, you know, tiny gaps. And now there's some pretty big holes to fill, especially, I think, on defense. But again, I mean, you know, just look at where they're starting from offensively. Dalton, Green, Eifert, hopefully a healthy Giovanni Bernard. Tyler Boyd was a very good rookie last year. I think there's validity to bringing back Brandon LaFell. So if you do that, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? That's not bad. And then obviously, you know, there's questions on the offensive line. What's up with Jeremy Hill? Is Gio healthy? I think the bigger thing is on defense. They got to get more athletic. I'm not really fooled by what I saw at the end of the year because they feasted on crappy offenses. But, okay, you're starting from Atkins and you're starting from Vontaze Burfict. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And if you could bring back Drake Kirkpatrick, I think that's a pretty good place to start. And then you mentioned two top four round picks from last year in Billings and William Jackson. You are almost automatically going to get younger. It seems doable. if the standard, or maybe not to get to the Super Bowl, because I don't know, but man, I saw a New England team that wasn't that talented run roughshod through the AFC this year, and they ran roughshod through the AFC. Look around that conference and tell me the Bengals can't be the Kansas City Chiefs. The Oakland Raiders won a bunch of games last year. It was an outlier to me because of how often they won in the fourth quarter. I don't think that's sustainable. Pittsburgh has questions. Indianapolis has a quarterback and nothing else. They have to have a big offseason, but the offseason that they have to me is doable.
Right. It's right. It's right in front of them. I would be with you on that. I am concerned about what's going to happen on the offensive line. I think to me, that's the biggest question hanging out there. It's the meatball. I don't know. The offensive line was bad. Now you're going to get rid of probably one of your two best guys on it. And so you had a guy who was between a questionable center spot and a questionable right tackle spot. The guy holding it together now is going to leave, and you're going to put another questionable one. What do you have?
Right.
What do you have there? And that I don't think that they can fix in one. They're going to need something to happen for them.
Right.
There. Now, whatever that is, maybe they need to make something happen. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's, you know, their pick at 41 is a guard, and you just plug them in Eric Steinbach style and say go, or even like Kevin Zeitler, who was picked at 27 overall. I mean, he's not that far off where you could put a guard in there, and all of a sudden you feel like you've fixed that position. I don't know what happens, but I know that's an issue when you talk about if you're going to have a 35-year-old left tackle, a guy who had a shoulder issue last year, a guy who improved to being average last year at center in Russell Bodine. I mean, that I see answers, and I'm comfortable with pretty much every other position. I think I will be after the draft.
Right.
I don't know that I will be on that line, and that's a concern for me because it can stall everything else.
It would just be good. It would be so much better if, as a fan, you felt better about Obuehi and Fisher.
It's a killer. Because, that draft has proven the killer.
Right. Now, and both those guys might prove to be quality NFL players.
Yeah.
You've written about Andre Smith. You know, it took Andre a year or two before, you know, he turned into the type of player he was. And maybe that happens with Cedric, and maybe it happens with Jake. If not, then that draft is going to go down as a huge whiff. But you're right. You're right about that. And then, you know, from there, there's, you know, I really worry about how the run game is going to look next season. But yeah, you're replacing a guy who plays a position better than almost anybody in the NFL. The good news is if he walks away, it's a position that you don't value that much. And the solution should be reasonably attainable. Maybe.
Yeah. All right. Don't
throw water on my optimism.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I didn't mean to come in here
staring at a 90 loss red season.
I know.
Come on.
It is going to be sad. Spring training's great though. Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Except now we get years of spring training, right?
We get a whole year of spring training.
We coming off of a previous year of spring training.
Yeah.
But that's the best part. We love spring training.
Yeah, exactly. Spring training's
it's one of the best parts of the year.
I wish they charge spring training prices.
Unfortunately they don't. And they could play in Arizona for all I care. That'd be fine.
Yeah.
So we'll make it 20 minutes until we talk about Adam Jones, which is probably pretty rare these parts. I don't know. You came out pretty strong on this topic, and Jim and I go back and forth on it. And I think clearly the team is still going back and forth on it. They have not made a call on how that's going to end, and the league is investigating. We'll see what they say. They're going to say something. What is it to you that says it? I'll ask you this, because this is where Jim and I often start. Is this about football, or is this about more than football?
Well,
for you.
Let's not pretend that football is not a part.
Right.
Okay? I mean, let's address that up front.
What's the bigger part, though?
The part for me is I can't count on them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I believe, and you've talked to Adam Jones a number of times. I've watched him on Beyond the Stripes, and I want to buy into his level of sincerity. I root for people to succeed, man. I want it to be a success story. I want to believe him. Marvin always says, I see better than I hear. I hear the tale of redemption, and then I see things that fly in the face of that, and those things compromise his availability. So right off the bat, I can't count on him. Number two, he's an older player. That's those things factor in.
Yep.
I had such a distaste for the police video, that it would be hard for me to root for someone like that.
Yep.
Especially because I don't believe that he's consistently doing the things he needs to do to make the changes necessary. And so I don't want that representing this team, especially when the potential reward for a guy who's 34 years old is limited.
Yeah.
So to me, there's a football component here. Look at this is a guy who was in his fourth season coming off an all-pro caliber year. Whether you like to admit it or not, you're a little bit more willing to stomach it, suck it up, and say, go get the help. When you're a guy who, despite all the great contributions he's made to the team and despite efforts that I'd like to think are you know, genuine and trying to be a better person, I continue to see things that make me cringe. The issue at the bar downtown a couple of years ago, which ultimately he was acquitted for. He's been kicked out of the casino a couple of different times. There's just a pattern of behavior that if you're an employer, you can't count on. And then there's the police cruiser video, which I just found to be disgusting, especially in this climate, especially a year and a half off of what the Cincinnati Police Department had to deal with. I just don't want to root for that. And I don't want to talk about him anymore. I don't want to, if I'm his coach, I don't want to worry about him anymore. And we're just to the point where the good that you get is not worth the potential bad. He might not be available week one. And if he is, I'm to the point with Adam Jones where I'm always wondering, okay, what's next? What's the next incident? What's the next incident that we have to excuse? What's the next incident that's going to be caught on video? And then there's just the simple standpoint. I don't know how you could, as an organization, look our local law enforcement agencies in the face and claim that that guy is what you want representing your brand.
Right.
Those things don't matter to some people, and that's okay. Those things matter to me. And so I'm at my wit's end, but there's a football component to it. I mean, I won't ignore that.
And you didn't even talk about what happened at the end of the Steelers game in the playoffs.
Right.
And you didn't even talk about, you know, smashing Amari Cooper's head onto his helmet in Oakland, or some of the things that have happened on the field. I mean, where you've seen this same, the pattern.
Right.
Showing itself even on the field occasionally when it is affecting you as a football team.
Yeah.
So now it's two straight years, and the first week in January, we're talking about Adam Jones' temper in some way, shape, or form, off the field or on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to say, okay, well, now that there's treatment, we're gonna get this taken care of. This has been, like you said, it's been going on a long time. And there's the other side of it is, well, who's their number one cornerback now?
Right.
Right? And you understand where that comes from. And even, okay, a guy in his prime, Dre Kirkpatrick, will he ever be as good as even Adam Jones is now?
Don't know.
I don't know that.
Yeah.
And so I hear the football side of it. And I hear the Bengals saying, you know, we've stood by Adam through a lot of stuff and really do see the good side in him. And I hear some of that. And I know what this organization is often about, which is about giving guys every chance imaginable and trying to see the good, but when it ends up,
when's the expiration date on that?
Yeah.
Is he going to be a troubled 44-year-old that they're still giving a paycheck to because they want to help him?
Right.
I mean, ultimately, at some point, Adam Jones is no longer going to be a professional football player, and at some point, the whole I gotta figure out a way to not be Pac-Man and be Adam when I'm off. At some point, grow up, dude. And you're right on the field. I mean. You know, I when he smashed Amari Cooper's head against his helmet, we talked about that on the show, and I was shouted down by people. Oh, look, he's Pac-Man. That's not Adam. Okay, then the playoff game. Oh, that's Pac-Man. That's not Adam. Okay, who was the guy in the back of the cop car?
Right.
What was that? Who was the guy that got arrested? Who's the guy that got kicked out of a casino? Who was the guy at the bar? It's just not worth the trouble to me. And I just get to a point where you just get exasperated. And I'm at that point with him. I don't want him to be. And I speak of this as a fan. I just don't want to have to I want to take a bath and root for Adam Jones.
Right.
I'm sorry. And that's, you know, it might sound unfair to a lot of people, but I just, it's not worth it to me.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, in, let's say, November at Pittsburgh, if he's out there and he has a pick six, guess about how many people that hated that video will not remember it.
Myself
and forget
included.
About it. Right. Tyreek Hill, perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
Gets drafted, gets blasted in Kansas City. By the time November came around, everybody had go Tyreek cheetah speed signs out and cheering and yelling, and he's Pro
but
Bowler.
We've done
and,
that with Adam Jones.
Right.
Tyreek Hill, to the best of my knowledge, has done nothing to throw away a second chance. This is not Adam Jones' second chance. And, the incidents that Tyreek Hill was involved in college were disgusting. It's same with Joe Mixon. It's one thing to get a second chance. It's another thing to run with that second chance and make the most of it. It's another thing to keep begging for third, fourth, and fifth chances. And with Adam Jones, we're beyond the second chance end of this. This is a guy, you know, he keeps talking about his love for Marvin Lewis. Well, then show it. Show it by not costing him a playoff win. Show it by justifying his patience with you. Show it by making so that when Marvin goes on a show like he went on yours the night after Adam Jones got arrested, that he doesn't have to answer questions about your behavior. If you really, really want to show your appreciation for Marvin Lewis, stop putting your coach in these predicaments, right?
Right. Absolutely. No, there's no doubt about it. That's always, to me, I think it's always going to be a part of the puzzle. With Adam, you know, and I honestly do believe, and I think he sincerely believes what he talks about with his redemption arc, and I think he does have a bit of a mentor type thing to him, but I don't think he knows how to control that in himself. I don't think he's figured that part out yet. I think he means well. I think when he says that stuff and we talk about, you know, the things he says and about overcoming and being better and being a different guy, I do think he believes it, and I do think he's trying to, but I do think there's just this part of him that it's always going to be a part of him.
Which is, you know, going beyond football, he's closer to the end of his career than he is the start, right? He's in his mid-30s. Say what you want about him this year.
He's certainly not going to go past this contract, which has two more years in it.
At some point, Adam Jones is going to have to go out and figure out a way to function like a normal person. And normal people are not getting arrested. I mean, you could tell me all you want that he's not the same guy he was in Tennessee and that he's, for the most part, walked the straight and narrow here. And I would tell you that's fine, but we've also devoted on my radio show significant chunks of time exploring his off-field behavior and talking about how his on-field behavior has hurt the team. No one would deny that he has really done a lot of really good things for this team. He was magnificent in 2015. No one would deny his value as a mentor to other guys on that. I've heard enough guys say that I do believe that, and I think he's coming from a good place. But at some point, he's going to have to go figure out a way to function like a normal person, and he's going to have to figure out a way to take whatever causes him to behave that way and have it stop. That's independent of his career. That's independent of what he's doing professionally. So regardless of whether he's a Bengal or not, I would tell Adam Jones, dude, at some point you got to grow up.
Yep.
At some point the light bulb either comes on or it doesn't. And if you don't want people saying the things about you that they say, then we need an exceptionally long period of time where we don't read about what you're doing off the field. We don't read about you getting kicked out of places. We don't see video of you punching people. We don't see video of you in the back of a cop car. Let's see it. Let's see it.
Yeah. What would happen to you here at ESPN 1530 if you had, in the last 4 years, had multiple arrest incidents with video of violence? And so, I mean, do you feel... You got enough clout around here?
No.
You could hang on through that?
No.
You could just walk down the hall and be like, listen, you got me all wrong.
Yeah. No. They're actually probably rooting for that to happen, so they have an excuse. Get rid of me with cause.
Right.
No. No.
No. And that's part of it. And my point being, I think the Bengals and football – outside of the world of just basic business principles,
mm-hmm.
take what has happened here or with other guys that have had issues, whether it's on the team. We go back to, you know, the mid-2000s with all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Take that and put it into your workplace, if you're listening here. Put it in your lap. If you do, what are the chances that you would be able to keep your job?
Right.
And that it would be, and that it would be, look, people would look away from that because you're really good at it. They're not great.
No.
They're just not great. And but because it's football, I feel like we put it in this different realm when it shouldn't.
No.
It's business, it's jobs, it's people. It's what you're expected to do as a citizen and how an employer wants to be represented publicly.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, to me it's that simple. I think people too often put football players and NFL teams under a different umbrella than every other business in the country because I guess it's supposed to be expected of these guys because they're violent in nature. Well, maybe, but should we accept that?
No. No, we shouldn't because Adam Jones is not the norm. Look, you're in that locker room multiple times a week for 9 months out of a year. There's good guys on that team.
Absolutely.
And there's good guys who you want to play with. And you want to play with because they bring an edge. They bring an attitude. They play the way you want a player to play. And yet they behave off the field normally. I'm just looking for normal behavior from Adam Jones that doesn't compromise his availability, that doesn't make me feel like I'm doing something wrong by rooting for him. I don't have to worry about, is he going to be available to the team or is he going to hurt the team? And I don't feel that way about Adam Jones. If he's on the team, I don't know what he's going to do to hurt them. And I don't know what he's going to do off the field to maybe make it so that I can't use him.
Yep.
Plus, he's 34 years old. And plus, the Bengals are a private organization, but they're a public trust. And they're also one of the biggest brands in the city. I wouldn't feel comfortable with somebody who represents my brand saying what he said to that police officer and trying to get people to be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
I just wouldn't.
Yeah, and I think that's why we've seen a lot of people have been very outspoken about it, whether it be on social media or with your on your show,
mm-hmm.
or people I hear from through emails or whatever. And I think because of exactly what you just talked about, it's a black eye on the city.
Yeah.
Because it is, I mean, he's probably one of the biggest, I mean, he's individually one of the biggest faces that is this city.
Sure.
He's one of the first people when you say, oh, a sporting event is going, oh, is Adam Jones there? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, nationally, he has that appeal. And yeah. Not a lot of guys here have that nationally.
And what drives me nuts is I have the people that say, well, you know, I mean, if you're going to talk about what he did in the back of the cop car, what he may or may not have done at the Millennium Hotel, then talk about the fact that he gave away turkeys at Thanksgiving or he gave away bikes to elementary school kids. And I think that stuff is great. And I believe he's coming from a real, you know, heartfelt place when he does those things. But that doesn't give you license to act like a jackwad everywhere else.
Yeah.
You know, we don't. If that's why he's doing it, and I don't think that's why he's doing it, then let's not celebrate it. You know, you don't get to do bad things because you did nice things. And there is this belief by some, and I think it's a minority, a tiny minority, but a loud minority, that will say, well, look, he goes to Xavier games and he signs autographs and he poses for selfies. That's great. But that doesn't buy you enough equity to act like a criminal. Or say the things that he said to that police officer. I keep coming back to this and people get mad at me. I mean, I cannot imagine for the life of me telling a cop, I hope you die.
Right.
I'm sorry. I can't get over that. And, you know, some have and will disagree. But you don't get to do that because you do all the other things well. And you don't get to do that because on Sundays – you've created this persona that you can't escape from the other 6 days of the week.
I'm curious. I think this has created a very interesting testing scenario for the Bengals as a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of like we put this into a petri dish here, and now we're gonna look at it and see what happens. Where has this organization come since they have said a lot of things mm-hmm. about the way they treated and acted towards players and cared about character and this type of thing? When it really does go against this football thing of where are those two against each other right now? For you as a franchise, what are you willing to accept? And I think it's created an interesting scenario. And clearly, obviously, inside the organization, there's multiple sides of this fighting with each other. And I'm really curious to see how it plays out and what this organization has decided it is willing to tolerate anymore. I think it's going to be we often talk about painting broad brushes on what the Bengals have become. And it's really hard to pinpoint specifically. You just see little things. Here's one cut and dry.
Mm-hmm.
What are you about? As a franchise, what are you willing to tolerate? Are you willing to tolerate this kind of thing? Is football and maybe getting one or two more years out of a guy more important than this type of black mark on your franchise and on the city and what you stand for? I just think it's created a really interesting scenario that I'm curious to see how the Bengals front office and organization deals with.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be.
If they're that well run of an organization, they can figure out a way to survive without Adam Jones.
I would agree.
If they're that well run, you know, if all the good things we've said about the Bengals for a number of years now, if those things are true, then you can figure out a way to move on from him. And again, the Bengals have, and I think we've shown a lot of patience with a lot of different guys. Vontaze Burfict's issues with the Bengals have been limited to what happens on the field. But, I mean, there was great exasperation with him. And what do we all say? Look, use the suspension, have the Clue phone go off, and come back and play the way we know you could play without doing all the dumb stuff. What did he do this year? I loved how Vontaze Burfict played. Loved it. Boy, we're willing to give you a second opportunity. We're willing to give you a third opportunity. We're willing to watch you work through what you need to work through. But there's a finite point, and there's a line.
Yeah.
And Adam Jones has hit that point, and for my money, he's crossed that line.
One last thing I want to get in with you before I let you go and then go try to fill more hours talking about stuff.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you. I always love the fact that, you know, you still go to games. You still are out there as a fan, getting what the real fan experience is at every game. Sometimes you're probably pretty pissed off that you've chosen that route. But I do think it helps you. It obviously helps you relate to the people that you're talking to every day. But I think it gives you a proper perspective of this team, the totality of what this organization projects and what they are, not just on the field from the press box or in an analytical point. It's the full big picture. So I want to talk a little bit about game day, game atmosphere. Just go everything about it, from what you're watching, what you see on the field, to what you see on the concourses, to what it's like to be a Bengal fan and go to a game on a 1 o'clock on a Sunday in October at Paul Brown Stadium. Let's just do this.
Okay.
Three best things.
Okay.
And then we'll get to the three. I like positive first, and then we'll get you angry at the end. What are the three best things for you about going to a Bengals game on a Sunday in October at 1 p.m. at Paul Brown Stadium?
I think by comparison, it's affordable.
Yeah.
A Bengals ticket compared to the rest of the NFL is, I know they've raised some ticket prices this year, but by NFL standards is pretty cheap. Now, that it might not be cheap for you. It might be, you know, reaching in your pocket for a dime for someone else. But by NFL standards, it's pretty reasonable. And that's tickets, concessions, I live close enough that I don't have to park, but you know, downtown parking is not outrageous when you compare it to other cities. And as someone who's gone to see the Bengals in other cities, I can tell you from a ticket standpoint, from a parking standpoint, from a concession standpoint, it's much less expensive here. It's not cheap, but it's less expensive. So that to me would be number one. I also think, and I don't know if this was done or if it just happened organically, going to a Bengals game about 10 years ago was kind of iffy. Fights, drunks, you know, you wouldn't want to take your kid. It just wasn't. The angry young man factor was through the roof. That's kind of gone. The only fight I've seen at a Bengals game in the last 5 or 6 years was in the men's room, and it was a woman that chased her boyfriend into the men's room and was beating him up. So... which was incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. You want that.
And my phone was in my drink holder, so I couldn't get it.
Oh, huge misstep.
Aside from that, it feels like that factor. Mid-2000s, man, it was rough. You know, when the team got good, there was a... boy, there was, you know, my dad was still living, and we go to games and look at each other and go, boy, this, you know, this isn't that much fun. Mm-hmm. That's kind of gone. I'd be lying if I said I like the stadium. So there's not much about the amenities that I really like. But where I sit is section 346. Right behind us is a cocktail bar. And they're liberal with the pours.
Yeah. Sweet. This is a plus. I mean, hey.
The escalator's right there, and the men's room's right there, and there's a Papa John's stand right there.
Wow.
So, I mean, I get a Papa John's pizza at the end of the first quarter every game. The escalator's right there, so we jump off and we go, and there's a very liberal pour at the cocktail bar right behind us. So, those are the best three.
That's really all you can ask for, by
the way.
Having those three things right there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's better than the living room.
And kind of coming, yeah, it is. Kind of coming back to point number two, where I sit, there's enough people who come to every game that if you come and act like a jackass, something's going to be said to you. You know, I know it's maybe different in other parts of the stadium, but for the most part, if you decide that you're going to be the guy to ruin everybody else's experience, it's not going to be tolerated.
Yeah.
So, and that doesn't mean you can't be loud and rowdy and cheer. And even sometimes I stand up too much for the good of the people behind me, and they'll say, "Hey, man, sit down." So, but for the most part, it's an enjoyable experience.
I got to say, liberal pours across. I don't care what your business.
Yeah.
If you can find a way to sneak liberal pours into what you're about. You are going to make so many more people
happy. Should be what they call the cocktail bar up there. Yeah. Liberal pours.
Liberal pours.
Yes.
Let's open a bar. Let's open a bar called Liberal Pours. And we do nothing but over pour at the sake of our own profit. But you're getting a quality drink. And then somehow we have to find a way to keep it family friendly and not as many fights. I don't know how you do that, but they're doing it in section 346.
They are, yes.
So good on you, section 346. All right, let's go to the other side of it. What are the three worst things about a Sunday?
Paul Brown Stadium sucks.
It does.
I mean, look, it sucks. They get mad at me. The only time in my career the Bengals have gotten mad at me is I was quoted in your publication. Joe Reedy did a story at the end of the 2010 season about season ticket holders that have decided to bolt or stay. And he asked me, and I said, well, you know, people who call in and talk to us, they're upset with the way the team plays, but it's also the atmosphere. And I said, part of it is that Paul Brown Stadium has the character of my grandfather's tool shed. That's the only thing in all the years I've been doing this, the only thing they've ever gotten mad at me for.
Yeah.
I've crapped all over the coach. I've dumped all over players. I mean, like, that's the only time they've ever called the radios. And it was, I didn't even say it on my show. So.
It's a good line, though.
The place stinks.
Yeah.
And I'm conflicted because the lease is up soon. And this has been talked about. You know, your colleague Paul Dougherty has made allusions to it. Like, we're getting closer to the time where they look at their joint and go, okay, this is outdated and we need a new one. And I'm anti-publicly funded stadiums. I certainly don't want the Bengals to go, but I also want a new stadium because Paul Brown Stadium just stinks. And it's been, I remember the first game, the first exhibition game, August 2000, my dad and I going and him and I like walking around and looking at each other like, really? Like, this is what, whatever it was, you know, at the time, $500 million pays for? Like, this is it?
Yeah.
And they've tried. They've added new video boards. They've added, finally, new TVs on the concourses. They've put in some decent concessions. They're trying with what they have. But, I mean, those big pictures when you walk in of the old Pro Bowlers, they've needed to be dusted for 15 years. There's just nothing.
Can't you dress it up? Is it a matter of dressing it up? Because to me, I think that's part of the problem. You say it lacks character, like your grandma's tool shed,
right?
Can't you hang stuff and new photos and jazz it up and just bring in an interior decorator?
Yeah.
You don't need to bring the building down. Like you said, section 346 is love and life. You got the escalator,
you got
the liberal pours, you got the pizza. I think the amenities are okay. I think you're okay with the bones. It just needs a master interior decorator to come in and turn it into. You go to a lot of away games,
yeah.
And obviously I go to all of them. The other stadiums jazz up the stadium to feel like you're going into a special place. This Paul Brown Stadium feels like you're going into an office building.
When I go to Lucas Oil, the word that comes to mind is vibrant.
Yeah.
When I've gone to see the Bengals play in Tennessee, I think of vibrance. With Paul Brown Stadium, there's no vibrancy a word?
Yes.
Okay, but there's no vibrancy.
Yeah.
There's just, it's just aesthetically not pleasing. I mean, and like, again, people get mad at me when I say that. And I know we you know, like, oh, you know, it's football, who cares? Like, I do.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be nice to walk around
and
see
and,
nice things.
And you would, and there's a pride in being that 12th man and being that home field advantage that you get from it feeling like it the moment you walk in the door.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of it. At any of these places, whether it's Seattle that's nuts or mm-hmm. these places you name, I mean, it comes because you walk in and it feels like that from the beginning.
Yeah.
And that's not all on the fans to bring it.
No.
It should start with the team. And there's ways to do that.
So number one is the stadium, and I'll go 1A is there's no Hall of Fame. We've beaten that topic to death. It'd be nice to take someone to the Bengals Hall of Fame, and you know, we'll see what happens with that long term. So that would be number one. Number two is the pat down situation.
Yeah.
And I know the Bengals say that's an NFL thing. It is so remarkably inefficient. It is the Steelers game this year, I came on the south entrance, and it took 45 minutes to get in the stadium. That's just not excusable. I don't believe for a second it's done for Homeland Security. I think it's done to keep people from bringing booze in. I mean, I'm not stupid. The pat-downs are inefficient. The wands are often turned off. The people who do it are often unfriendly. I make no bones about saying these things. And it just takes way too long. It shouldn't – you know, we typically come in from the – I guess it would be the east side there on Freedom Way. And if you're not lined up sometimes by 12:15, you have a chance of not seeing kickoff. I've been to other stadiums that have been almost as inefficient, but every single week, that's just not an effective way of doing things. Part of it is the footprint. You know, there's just limited space for people to go. And I know they're trying to get people to come in the stadium sooner, but that is an annoyance that just drives me nuts.
Right.
Because it doesn't have to be that way.
And you sit there and you look at the crowd of people ahead of you trying to squeeze in.
Yeah.
And you think, well, okay, well, at least up front, they're trying to make it happen. And then you get up there and you realize why all those people are sitting there trying to get in.
Right. Yeah. So that is, like, I dread that part of it.
Yeah.
I dread that part of it.
And let's be honest, you have to know that's a problem. Can't you just put more entrances in? Can't you just have more spots for people to go through that circle the stadium in some way, shape, or form? You would have to think that there is. All right, that's good. That's two.
All right, I'm trying to think of a third.
I mean, you're just a man of positivity now. You can't. You're a change. You can't even come up with three things to be mad about. I mean, this is unacceptable.
Well, I mean, like, the escalator working about 50% of the time bothers me, but that kind of ties in with the stadium thing, right?
Right.
Like, to me, there's no greater metaphor for how much Paul Brown Stadium sucks than the fact that the escalator is hit or miss. Now, that used to really bother me when my dad was still living because he had some mobility issues because he had had a couple of strokes. And so I came on the air, and they got mad at me for this too. The escalator didn't work, but they wouldn't let him on the elevator.
Yeah.
So I watched this man who had a hard time walking. I watched him amble down a broken escalator. And as I'm at the bottom of the escalator waiting, the guy in the Tenable security jacket's yelling at me to leave the stadium. And I'm like, well, I'm waiting for that guy, and I'm hoping he doesn't tumble all the way down the steps. So that's from, like, you know, 9 or 10 years ago. But when the escalator doesn't work, it drives me nuts. I'm trying to think of something else that bothers me about the whole stadium game experience.
I mean, you can throw play calling by the head coach and challenges if you'd like, or does anything on the field? I mean, are you willing to accept football as football and the team as?
Yeah, that's part of the inherent risk. Like,
you're putting
yourself at the mercy of the performance and the team and the coach. You know, I would say that the kind of tying into what we've talked before about the lack of Ring of Honor, that type of thing. It would be neat if, when you went to a Bengals game, there was something. Maybe it's a player from the past comes out to flip the coin. Maybe it's a fun team from the past is honored. Maybe it's, you know, football teams typically don't do giveaways, but maybe if you're trying to get people to come into the stadium early, you do some sort of bobblehead or something of something like that. And again, I know those things are more, you know, kind of baseball-ish, but there's not much more than the game itself. Mm-hmm. Now, for a lot of people, myself included, that's okay. But it'd be kind of fun if the whole experience was amplified just a little bit. Yeah. I mean, the most excited I've ever been for anything happening off the field was when a monkey rode a dog at halftime. That was exciting. Yeah. They could bring that act back for every halftime.
Well, of course. Yeah. I could do mascot football every single week.
Here's my other one. I just thought of it. Here's my biggest pet peeve. It's with the PA announcer.
Oh.
Okay? No one in their right mind when watching a football game says, how about how Vontaze Burfict stacked up Le'Veon Bell? Stop saying stacked up. Paul Brown Stadium PA announcer guy, stacked up. Who says that? He was tackled by. Tackled by is never going to get old. Stop getting cute.
You can stack up.
Stacked up. What does that mean?
You know.
He was stacked up by.
But as long as he was actually stacked up, I assume that's when they don't actually go to the ground. You know when sometimes they hit him and they go to tackle him and they end up walking back on the other side of the line? To me, that's maybe stacked up. But if that guy ends up on the ground, nothing up happened.
Hmm.
It was all down.
It's bad verbiage. Just he was tackled by. Counts as a tackle.
This is what I
want. Stop with the stacked up Paul Brown Stadium PA announcer guy.
All right, now that I got you angry, I'm gonna start the timer.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Charles Oakley. Okay. Listen, now that you're heated a little bit, I've got the blood pressure going, let's do this. I won't even say Charles Oakley. What is the state? What is like the state of a Knick fan right now?
Despondent.
Has it gone somehow further, like rock bottom, like below a new, they carved out
they keep
something
digging.
You didn't know?
The Charles Oakley thing for a lot of Knicks fans would be amusing. If the team was managed well, you know, people dump all over Mike Brown, and I go, look, man, Google James Dolan, and consider my life where I've rooted for Mike Brown's team my whole life, and I root for James Dolan's team, and I have for my whole life. He's the worst owner in sports. It's such a comically inept franchise, from, you know, so many bungled drafts. To the way they...
Why do they love old guys that are expensive and hurt?
I think there's a...
Where did that come from?
I think there's a belief, and this isn't exclusive to the Knicks. I think it's a New York City thing, where we've got to win, we've got to show we're winning. And in reality, fans in of every team are smart enough that if you show me a rebuilding process and you show me something that it might take a couple of years, but here's our plan... Well, okay, that makes sense, and yet that team, much like the Yankees in baseball, the difference in baseball is the Yankees had built-in economic advantages over everybody else. In the NBA, it's a salary cap league, where it was, let's just go find the guy who was good 4 or 5 years ago, or let's just go find the superstar and then let the rest take care of itself, or let's disregard draft picks for guys who are proven commodities. And it doesn't work that way. It rarely works that way in the NBA. It's not worked that way for the Knicks. They've been bad for so long, and yet they've had so many years where they didn't even have a lottery pick. They finally got good toward the end of last decade. Donnie Walsh comes in, this brilliant executive from the Pacers, and it feels like that the franchise is going in the right direction. He unloads all these bad contracts. They make the Amari Stoudemire acquisition, and it kind of felt like things were going in the right direction. And then the owner gets upset that the general manager was getting too much credit. He runs him out of town. He has a love affair with Isaiah Thomas. They actually do build a pretty good team in 2012 and 2013. They won 54 games. They won a playoff series for the first time since 2000. And it kind of felt like, all right, things are going in the right direction. And then they bring in Phil Jackson. He totally diminishes his best player's value by crapping all over him on social media. They make the Joakim Noah signing, which doesn't work out. And they've created an environment where now they have this. They have Kristaps Porzingis, who is going to be a star, and yet the atmosphere is so ugly and so toxic. He's not going to want to hang around and play there. He's not. You've seen how they treat former players. You've seen how they treat current players. So it's. I mean, Phil Jackson's on Twitter like a 12-year-old girl, tweeting about, you know, subtweeting. He's doing that with his best player that he's trying to trade. I mean, it's just an asinine way to run your organization. The ticket prices are exorbitant. The owner rarely does interviews. The president of the team rarely does interviews. They've had 10,000 coaches. It's been a disaster for 15 years. And so people like me cling to those 90s teams. Because while none of them won championships, and they were always a foil to Jordan or Elijah Wan or Reggie Miller, those guys gave a crap. Like, those guys played, they played a very ugly brand of basketball, but there was a toughness to them. There was a you know, we care to those guys. To see them treat a player in Charles Oakley that I think for a lot of us personified that era of Knicks basketball hurt so bad, and it just took a dumpster fire, and it added all this gasoline to it, and it's really, really just made you go, man, I can't believe I chose this team as the NBA outfit to root for.
Now I feel bad.
Oh, it's awful.
I took you to a bad place. I found it funny at first, yeah. And then I watched
this
you like
catharsis.
Then I watched you like go further and further down the wormhole, and now yeah. I just feel bad. I shouldn't. I mean, this no one deserves this on a Monday.
It stinks. It's like. I feel like the New York Knicks should never be bad. They should never be bad.
No, they should be the premier team in the league.
Right, and
they have everything
have to win
going
championships.
For them.
They just should never be bad, and they've always not always, but for the last 15 years, they've been horrific.
Yeah,
whether it's bad draft picks, they drafted a guy named Frederick Weiss, 2000, who's become the mascot for bad Knicks draft picks. Awful coaches. There was the sexual conduct scandal involving Isaiah Thomas. They got rid of Marv Albert.
I know. By the way, you just stepped onto something that I love. Could we have a mascot of terrible draft picks? Like, who actually is out there, like, with the other mascots, does the trampoline dunking thing, you know, dances?
How much fun would that be?
That would be great if it, you know, if Darko Milicic was out there in Detroit dancing in the aisles and stuff, yeah. And doing, you know, like, that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
The mascot of bad draft picks.
That'd be great. That'd be fun for All-Star Saturday.
Achilles Smith is like, you know, shooting t-shirts out of the t-shirt gun into the stands. This is a great idea. This is maybe the best thing we've ever talked about.
Thank you for allowing me to get that off my chest.
No problem. It was hard to watch, to be honest. All right, Mo, thank you for
letting me
come up here and crash your studio.
Well, wait a minute before we go.
Yeah.
The fight.
Oh, you're right. We have a fight to promote.
Yeah.
So
now, how did this start?
This, I think it started on, it's all because of Andy Dalton.
Okay.
Because Hot Take James hates Andy Dalton.
Hmm.
And that pissed off Jim Ossarski, and he came back, I believe, on Twitter and was trying to just throw some facts out there about Andy Dalton and what he's been as a quarterback and
right.
possibly some of your options that you're considering if you're taking a quarterback
never,
on the draft, number nine
I've
or
never
whatever.
I noticed that James hates, Hot Take James,
no,
hates
yeah.
Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
I've been critical of him, but
critical.
We all have.
Yeah, no. Okay. I think considering replacing him with a draft pick.
Oh, okay.
I think was gotcha. What set it over the edge. Because we like James.
Yes.
Yeah.
James.
I have.
I love working with him.
Yeah.
He's done a great job.
Absolutely.
Does everything
but
for
this,
me.
But this, like, really, this feud that I love to turn into a feud.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I like the idea of this becoming a feud, even
right.
though it's probably not. I love the idea of it becoming one. And Jim just got hot. He just got on a roll the other day on the podcast, and he started, Hot Take James' name came up, and it kind of turned into a whole thing. And so when Jim's on vacation this week, and I said, well, I'm gonna go up there and talk to Mo. Should I have James come on and we can hash this out? He said, no, I have to be there.
Hmm.
He needs to be there. We want to have this out. So we're promoting the fight right now,
like a physical fight.
No,
oh,
a war of words.
Twitter fight?
No, a war
okay.
of words.
War of words.
A war of words. Two men, two microphones. One topic,
this
and that
good.
Topic being the Bengals quarterback situation.
This is good.
And whatever else you want a hot take on
oh.
for James.
as we get closer to the draft. Why don't
we can line this up.
For like 2 months.
I could be like Mills Lane, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'll show I have a referee.
The closer
shirt.
We get to the draft, the hotter the takes are going
to
be.
Oh man, they're about to steam
and
up.
He gets frustrated with me because I have no interest in them. Yeah. And so part of it, I feel responsible that if I showed some interest in his draft takes, of which I have no concern for, I don't value, I don't care about, if I just pretended to care a little bit more, maybe he wouldn't be quite as out there with his draft hot takes.
So this is your fault?
Yeah, it kind of is my fault.
You're suppressing him and turning him into this beast.
Last weekend, he came to work, and he's like, oh, over the weekend, he goes on some website and he watches film. Now, how...
Draft breakdown,
yeah. Right. Okay. I don't know if you use this site.
I do.
Okay. I'm never going to it. I don't care about it. I don't value it. I don't know. I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care enough. And he came in with his notes, and I just, it's like, buddy, like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing, man? Yeah. Do you really think anyone cares about that? I don't care what professional scouts say. Because ultimately, I believe it's 50% a crapshoot anyway.
You're right.
But boy, it's as we get closer to the draft, the hot takes will come fast.
Oh yeah. So we'll find a nice week here in the dead season coming up between free agency and the draft.
See, James,
we'll line it up.
Here's the thing, like James, and we've worked together for 2.5 years now, I think, and so. James really, he wishes he was the love child of Todd McShay and Skip Bayless. Like, if they had a kid, that's what he wishes. So he used to come in my office. We'd sit down before the show, and we would just exchange ideas and whatever. And I'd say something, and he would like squirm in his seat, like, "Oh my God, we're about to do an episode of First Take in Mo's office," and like he would say, "Like, are we really gonna do this?" And I'd say, "Like, no, not really. Like, what are we gonna do on the show? Like, whatever." So he like really, like we have since given him an outlet. He's got a blog. He's doing shows on the air.
He's really growing.
He is growing and doing a great job.
Yeah.
But it used to be he didn't have that creative outlet except for the seat in my office where he would just. So I've thankfully he's moved on to where he can go on Twitter or on his blog or his podcast or whatever and just pop off these mindless opinions about things.
That's it. I mean, it's really about you letting him be a butterfly and spread his wings.
Yeah.
And fly away and not yelling in your office.
Sometimes we'll be doing the show and I'll say something he doesn't like and I could just see him in the other room. And I've kind of like said to him, like, all right, like when you feel like chiming in, chime in. Right. And to be fair, he usually sort of like gives me a look or raises his hand like he's in class. But I can always tell when it's driving him nuts that I'm saying something that he doesn't like, that he doesn't agree with, that flies in the face of one of his hot takes, and he's like in there losing his mind. And I always enjoy that. So
well,
the fight between Jim O and Hot Take James, I am on board for.
Yes. So everybody, if you're listening here to the BBP, just know that there's going to be a big time fight coming up in the future. Maybe we can get some like some high end promoters to come in and help us out with that. Maybe we can get some billboards around the city.
We could do like a
weigh in.
Well, what we could do is we can make it like a debate, right?
Yeah.
We can moderate the debate.
Yeah.
And you could moderate or whatever.
I think the two of us together
can moderate.
Can serve as
and
moderators.
It'll just be the James versus Jim, Hot Take James versus Jim O debate.
Yes.
Where it's, we throw out a topic like, who's going to win the AFC? No, not even that. Like, everybody's in pain. It's just some sort of like inane, dumb sports takey, and just let them go, we'll moderate and determine who wins.
That's and this came up when I realized that Jim loves sports talk radio. Like he loves listening to it in other markets.
Yeah, so do I.
And hearing right. So this is a perfect fit. Maybe me, I just listen to you.
Well, Jim, Jim does listen to us, and you listen to us, which is nice. James, when he started working on the show, I think he had hoped this would be. And we do traditional sports talk type of stuff, but I think he thought this would be the kind of show where it's like those guys on TV who are yelling and screaming things about each other.
Yeah.
And we have become more and more – I've become more and more willing to admit, look, there's nothing happening right now, so let's not pretend that there is something happening. My biggest weakness as a host, and there's many, is when nothing's happening, I'm not good at pretending something's happening.
Right.
And so I can't manufacture these garbage topics like the Bengals are going to draft a quarterback with number 9 overall.
Yeah. What about Stephen A. Rapine? Is that, ooh, you like that?
He loves him. He loves him some Stephen A.
That might be a good.
He loves him some Stephen A.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Here's
Stephen
the difference,
A. Sarsky?
Stephen A.
Ooh. Stephen A. Sarsky. I'm trying to think of some good nicknames. If we're going to have a good fight, you've got to have a couple of good nicknames. Hot Take James is pretty strong.
Hmm.
You know, so I don't know. We'll work on it. This is all part of the process. This is all part of the process.
Jim
of
has all those consonants in his last name.
Yeah.
He could be Jim Vallis.
Jim Vallis. Vallis Osarsky.
Yeah. Play off on the Skip Bayless
we've got,
thing.
We've got.
Yeah, well, those two can fire off take. We'll moderate.
This is great. So keep an eye on that in the future. Mo, again, thank you for letting me come up here. Had a good time doing it.
Thanks for having
and,
me.
And we'll do this again very soon when we are we're in the middle. We're just sitting back and watching it all go down. So, BBP back next week. We are headed to the combine. So, just so y'all know.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah.
Oh,
very
boy.
Exciting.
Oh, man. I wish I was going.
We
need a guide to your Facebook
hey,
live.
Fans can go and like watch them do the bench press now this year. Yeah, they're like letting fans in to come watch portions of it. Yeah. You can come watch
I'd
the bench press.
I'd rather jump into a cage with a tiger.
Yeah, it's big. It's big. So if you want to come watch the bench press, say hello to us. So you can come do that. We'll be there. So just so as a note, the BBP will be back a couple of days because we want to give you stuff from the combine, which we won't be up there till Wednesday. So it'll be later in the week, next week, and then we'll have a full recap of it and look into free agency after that. So everything's coming, but just know the schedule is going to be a little off the next couple of weeks. So that's that. We always do a song on the way out. I assume you want Bruce, or unless you have something else on your mind musically
Bruce.
Now. All right. So
yeah.
any particular Bruce that you've been feeling lately?
Adam, that's, raise the cane.
All right. That's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one. All right. Knock it out. Bring in Bruce. Thank you, Mo, for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time on the BBP.